Welcome to the Arctic edition of In the Trenches. The polar vortex is sitting down on top of Ann Arbor right now, and the Buckeyes came to town Tuesday night and left feeling a little bit chilly. We'll talk about this with Coach Beilein and the rest of this basketball season on this edition of In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
The place was jacked up. We had a capacity again. I think every game's been sold out. And it was from the beginning to the end. Everybody stuck in there and watched a tremendous performance by everybody, but especially Xavier Simpson.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
We've got a special basketball edition of In the Trenches today. 20-1, our Wolverines are. 17-0 start, back on a roll again, and Brian Bush has called a couple of the games so far this year. Pretty special team, isn't it, Brian?
It really is, John. To have 20 wins in a college basketball season before February starts, it's been an amazing run. And in particular on Tuesday night, Xavier Simpson, just the sixth triple-double in University of Michigan men's basketball history. It was a fun night for Simpson and the Wolverines.
I definitely know I had a lot of assists just because guards were knocking down shots. It felt like every time I gave him the ball, they was knocking down.
Simpson, they work it around the perimeter. Livers for three. Book it! Simpson puts it up ahead for Poole. Nice over-the-shoulder catch in LA.
This is a big game to him. I'm not saying any other game is not big, but he's very familiar with those Buckeyes on that team.
Don't lose sight of a possible triple-double. Don't kid yourself. He knows what he's got.
He was absolutely sensational today.
Hook shot on the way. Off the glass and good. A double-double for Xavier Simpson. He's a rebound shy of a triple-double.
I never noticed my rebounds until two of the assistant coaches whispered in my ear like at a five-minute mark, get one rebound.
Oh, he'll definitely get that. There's no doubt about that.
That's when I looked up there and like, oh, I got 11 points, 9 rebounds, I think 11 assists, so I'm like, I should definitely finish this up.
Rebounded, collected, Simpson's got the triple-double.
It feels good. Honestly, I'm astonished that I'm in a position to do this.
He was such a vocal point on this team today.
I'm just good. It's not just good for myself, but it's good for the team.
It meant a lot to him to win this game. It meant a lot to John Teske to win this game, our two Ohio guys. So huge for us, and we got the double.
Stolen by Simpson. Sprints into the front court. Bounce pass Livers. Stuffs it through! Exclamation point in Ann Arbor. A 20-point lead for the Maize and Blue.
That was Matt Shepard and Terry Mills on the calls, bringing all the excitement of the great event that we had at the Chrysler Center. And it was a sold-out, packed house on Tuesday night to watch Michigan trounce the Buckeyes. And it was one of those games where Michigan offensively, you could say, well, they needed to improve a little bit more and get a little bit more flow. But defensively, they are just unbelievable. And I had a chance to talk with Dan Dakich, who covered the game for ESPN the other day, and he was real excited about this Michigan defense and talked about Luke Yaklich and the job he's done as the defensive coordinator. And I love it when people use football terminology. Another football term that we used, and you're going to hear Coach Beilein in just a couple minutes use, is the quarterback position, and that is Xavier Simpson. So without further ado, let's hear what Coach Beilein has to say about his team, who is now 20-1. Well, we'd like to welcome Coach John Beilein to In the Trenches. Coach, you're 20-1 so far this season. What makes this team unique?
I think that we have a team that really enjoys playing defense. You're an offensive tackle, so I know you probably didn't enjoy playing defense. Maybe in high school, I'm sure they had you.
Oh,
in defense.
Oh yeah, both ways.
But this is a team that really likes it, and. They embrace it. We got a great defensive coordinator and Luke Yaklich, our DeAndre Haynes and Saadi Washington, do a great job of preparing the scout for every game, and then we sort of put it into action. So I believe we're in the DER is the defensive percentages. We're number one in the country in defense, so it's pretty good.
And really, over the last 2 years, your defense has skyrocketed up those charts. What do you attribute that to?
Well, I think and an emphasis, a bit more emphasis on it. Less zone. We used to play a lot of zone. Delegating to my assistants more, and then having players that really can do it as well. You can do a lot of different things. Like I could have never been a defender, right? but Xavier Simpson and Charles Matthews and now John Teske, those three sort of set the stage. So all of a sudden, when Jordan Poole got here, he was not a good defender at all. He was lost all the time. And now all of a sudden, he's become this really good defender as well. So we keep adding Iggy Bradzakis when, again, he was a freshman. Most of them, John, are lost. They're just lost at the beginning. There's so much action that they've never seen. And now, all of a sudden, he's like picking it right up. So it's sort of over time, we've just really grown defensively.
And I remember, I mean, I was a high school basketball player. And, you know, we always loved to shoot. I loved to play in the post, loved all those things. But then when it came time for defense, it was always, oh, man, how do you sell them on the fact that defense is so important?
The most difficult part of it is can you imagine if the quarterback, right, if the quarterback threw an interception and then he had to play safety the next play? It's still in your mind what happened on offense, and now you're going to defense. And so those are big things, and that's what most young kids can't understand, defensive transition. And I think we just educate them that, listen, if you play good defense, we're in a fast break. And that's the only way. We never run if they score on us. We're going to trot the ball up the court and get into offense. So they know that they're going to be rewarded with their defense. But we just preach it, and then the bench is a great motivator for that, John, right? If they're not playing defense, they need to come be an assistant coach for a little bit, and we'll see if somebody else can play defense.
The bench is a great motivator for a lot of things. When you look back to the 17-0 run that you guys had to start the season, really the only challenge, or at least in terms of points at the end of the game, that you faced was the Northwestern game in Evanston. What lessons can you learn in a run like that?
Yeah, that was we were always striving for that. I've been coaching a long time, and most of the coaching opportunities I had, in fact, everyone, the coach before me had been fired. So which meant that you hired sort of an adverse situation. So what you end up doing is just like growing through adversity exponentially compared to when you're winning. Mm-hmm. And so 17 wins in a row, we did not grow probably the way we would have if we had got knocked off early. But at the same time, as soon as we got beat, John, right, by Wisconsin. We didn't necessarily show it in Minnesota, but we showed it in Indiana, and we showed it here, the grit, the focus you got to have if you are going to continue winning. But losing is not good unless you turn it around and you make it a positive.
When you look at that Wisconsin game, I know it was in Madison. You've got them coming here in a couple of Saturdays. And you talk about the lessons that you learned. What was the number one thing that you tried to get across to the guys, over the course of a 32-game season?
Yeah, possessions. Each possession matters. And we took some shots. We had some turnovers in that game that were like you just don't get those opportunities again, especially against Wisconsin, where there's going to be limited possessions because they take their time with the ball. They're very patient. We're patient with it, and you just don't have as many possessions. And so when you give those away, you just can't win. You shoot the heck out of it. You can't win. So you just need to just – that was the biggest thing, that when crunch time came, when it was 6 minutes to go, we're ahead by one or it's a tie game, we had some downright foolish plays. And as a result, you don't win. And I think that was the biggest lesson we learned.
You've got a game coming up on Friday night against Iowa. Iowa is coming off a big win on Sunday against Michigan State. How do you prepare for a team like Iowa when you have to go there and play?
Well, Iowa did not beat Michigan State.
You're right. Purdue did. I'm sorry. Yeah, but Iowa is on a great run.
No, they had won five in a row, and now they've lost. They lost at home to Michigan State, and they ended up losing a tough one on the road at Minnesota, who's very good. And of course, Minnesota, we had to beat at the buzzer. So here's what we're going to face, John. Is we're going to face just like we did last Friday night in Indiana, but this Friday night. The game on Fox is like become this almost like Monday Night Football used to be back in the day.
Yeah.
People are excited. It'll be a wild sellout in Iowa. and people will be there, and it's like, here comes this 20-1 team in. Everybody's looking for quality wins so they can make the NCAA tournament. Beating a 20-1 team is a pretty quality win. And so as a result, it will be a jacked-up atmosphere, and we're going to have to – and they do a lot of – they're going to keep changing what they do, so we have to continue to guess and be very quick in a 30 seconds. And so we got to be – Xavier Simpson's got to be like a quarterback going to line of scrimmage and seeing a different defense out there and audibilizing quickly, because they'll continue to change up on us.
And, you know, you talk about the 20-1 team going to Iowa, and it seems – it's so hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. Carver-Hawkeye Arena, yeah. You know, and Ohio State found that last night coming here. Why does it seem so hard to win – on the road?
I use this quote all the time. I think when Sparta went to Athens, they had a tough time winning. When Athens went to Sparta, they probably had a tough – at the very beginning of sports, there's just a comfort level at home, and there's – we'll be outnumbered, you know, 16,000 to – we'll probably have 100 comp tickets, so 16,000 to 100. And it's just – it's tough on the psyche, and I think it's football, baseball, everything. You look at the numbers, the home team has an advantage, and you got to take that advantage away. But if you play – and I think our teams have been really successful on the road. We're not perfect, but I think if you don't turn the ball over like we did at Wisconsin, you take good shots, you're solid with your defense, you are in position to be in position to win. Doesn't guarantee a win, but all you need to do is be in position at the end. In the last 2 or 3 minutes, nothing matters. You make the plays, they don't. But if you don't pay attention to those things and you're down by 10 and they're at the foul line, you know, 3 or 4 minutes ago, you're not going to win.
How do you guys handle a challenge like that? How do they accept it? I remember when I was playing. I mean, I love playing in the Big House. There's nothing like it. And as I can imagine, the Chrysler Center is the same way.
Yeah.
But when you get a big win on the road, there's a special feeling about that. How do you guys handle
The Indiana game, you know, it was very quiet in the last minute when we were just finishing it up. And I said to the team, and I do this often, I said, this is what we play for. This is what we practice for. I don't remember as well a lot of great home wins. It's those road kills that, like, we love. Yeah. And I love. And you know, Kathleen will say to me, how do you remember that? I said, I will never forget that win. And it might be I'm the coach at Lemoyne, and we're playing Gannon, and we won at Gannon, which is tough. Or I'm the coach at Canisius, and we won at St. Bonaventure, right? Where we had never won, or hardly ever won. So all of a sudden, those things you remember. Those are the good things, when you can go and win during adverse times when 17,000 people are screaming at you, not for you.
Yeah, it's a special feeling. And I want to talk a little bit about some of your guys. You had mentioned Xavier Simpson already last night. Well, first of all, how was the atmosphere last night? I didn't get a chance to make it.
It was great. It was, you know, I was so happy. I tweeted it this morning that here we got 0 degrees. We got students coming from a little bit away. We got people get here, and it's a great location, but you still got to walk from in a parking lot when it's 0 degrees with children, whatever. The place was jacked up. We had a capacity again. I think every game's been sold out. And it was from the beginning to the end. Everybody stuck in there and watched a tremendous performance by everybody, but especially Xavier Simpson.
Is the rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State the same on the hardwood as it is in the Big House?
I think that all the rivalries you see in basketball are big, but they're not like football for one big reason. You only play them once.
Right.
Well, we could play Michigan State 3 or 4 times this year. And so you sort of, okay, you won a couple, we won a couple. Usually with Ohio State and Michigan in football, whoever wins that game might win the Big Ten championship or is going to the Rose Bowl. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, there's probably more riding on one game than there is with us. But it is – our fans love beating Ohio State in anything.
And there was only one time this year.
Only one time, and we made that very apparent to our team. We're not going to go in there. If they come in and they not outplaying us in Chrysler, this is our one shot with them. We got to get this done.
And talking about Xavier Simpson, last night got his first triple-double. Just talk about the job that he's done this football season.
It's like a first and probably only, because it's so hard to get for a guard to get 10 rebounds, for it to get 12 assists and no turnovers, John. That was incredible. And then score 11 points, 2 of them on skyhooks. So it's just like he's such a
– So he's got a little big man in him.
Oh, yeah, unique. I wish John Teske had his skyhook. We'd be a much better team. So it's just like he's just this unique character. Meanwhile, while one of the big mistakes we were making. We were allowing the guy that we were switching and allowing the guy he was guarding, C.J. Jackson, be switched on to other people guarding him. And the second half, we just said, no, X, you're on him. So he's guarding their one of their leading scorers, their best players. He's directing our offense. Mm-hmm. It was an incredible performance.
Is he the quarterback out there?
Oh, yeah, he's the quarterback. Yeah, he's Joe Montana, right? He's Joe Montana. You would resonate with that.
When you think about Jordan Poole, and I love watching him play because he's got this excitement about him. How much has he grown from making the buzzer beater against Houston to right now?
Well, he's grown from the time he came. He came here as a young, turning 18 virtually in the summer that he was starting school here. So he's a 17-year-old senior, I call him. Mm-hmm. So he came here, and that his idea, he was playing basketball, but he wasn't a basketball player. He was hooping, you know, taking shots. I think the first summer, John, he shot maybe 11% from three because the shot quality was so bad. We just let him go, and we just watched and observed and coached him a little bit because you got to sort of he's got to see big data to understand what happens. And then defense was, you know, the white picket thing you have around your house. That's what defense was. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up just gradually understanding by watching Muhammad Ali Abdur-Rahman last year play what it means to be a basketball player. And he's gradually getting there, still makes some incredible plays, offense and defense, cutting down on his mistakes, and he's just learning. And we love coaching him because he's got a lot of talent that just needs to grow.
And you brought up John Teske a couple of seconds ago. It seems to me that, you know, last year, and I think one of the things on campus that people were talking about was that he was kind of this gentle giant.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not that gentle giant anymore. What changed?
I think he's growing. I mean, his nickname was Big Sleep, and we changed it about a month ago and said, we're not calling him Big Sleep anymore. It's got to be something big, nasty, big something, but it can't be Sleep. And it's so common with big guys that they're sort of they're so big, and they haven't had to be physical because no one else is their size in high school. Mm-hmm. And if anybody saw Caleb Wesson play last night at 6'9", 270, he was physical, and John responded. And Caleb Wesson had 12 points on John, but two of them were pick-and-pop threes, which really is not John's responsibility to stop the pick-and-pop three. Somebody else got to rotate. So he did an incredible. The guy made two baskets against John in the post, and that was it. And he's been scoring on everybody. So he's doing that, but what we like best right now, he's a good passer. He can shoot threes, and he's great pick-and-roll player at the rim.
And it seems like the basketball that I knew growing up was you had a couple of guards, some forwards, and you had a big guy in the middle. Mm-hmm. And you know, you'd throw it down into the post and he'd make a move, and then it was, you know, it was a big man's game.
Yeah, yeah.
Now with Teske, he's a great example. You got big men that are shooting threes.
Yeah.
I mean, how much has it changed?
Yeah, I mean, we will this is something we want to keep doing, but the player's got to be comfortable with it. And throwing the ball into the post in most NBA, in most college, is not a thing of the past, but it's not even close to what it used to be. The three-point shot changed it a lot. You know, people want positionless players. And so as a result, John sort of is perfect for the new kind of basketball, but we do need to throw it into him more, especially when he's open to just even score a leverage shot where he can just get it and put it in. He doesn't have to go to any post moves.
When you take a look at what Ignas Brisdakis, and we'll just call him Iggy from here on out because that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
What does he bring to your team?
He brought it. What's really unusual is brought a freshman with a body of a sophomore or junior, mm-hmm. With a care level of a sophomore or junior, and then he just has to the basketball IQ is above most freshmen, and now he's starting to realize I can do more by doing less. I got to trust other people on the floor. I just don't have to put my head down and make a play like I did in high school. My team needs me to make open shots, make the next right play, and then usually guard a pretty good player.
And you've got a guy coming off the bench in Isaiah Livers who's in a lot of different teams and a lot of different situations he'd be starting. And I'm sure there's always this battle of who's your five, who's your six, who's your seven. How valuable is it to have him to be able to come off the bench?
I mean, really good for him to him to, first of all, embrace this role. He was banged up a little bit in the preseason and couldn't get on the court, so Iggy just sort of earned the position. And Iggy was our leading scorer in Europe as well. And I said, you know what? I said, we need a guy who can play a lot of position coming off the bench. That way we can be flexible. And so we came up with the idea, all right, let's just get Iggy into the right side of the floor as a left-hander, and let's teach Isaiah three positions. He can do it more because he was here last year, and it's really worked well. But he's been – that's not going to work if you're not receptive to it. He started a lot last year, but now he's actually scoring more than he did last year, and he's coming off the bench.
One of the things that me as a fan always knows about a Coach Beilein team is that you start the season out in one – at one level of performance, and then by the end of the year, it seems like it's a brand new team because of the improvements that you guys make all year long. This year, you started out, it seems like, at a higher level. Where do you see this team going as you continue to down the stretch of this
schedule? I think we started at a higher level, number one, because we made a trip to Spain, and which allowed us to really just get some of the gunk out of you when you're trying to learn what's the new team. And we did not play well in Spain. The ball stuck. Our percentages were way down. The ball didn't move. And our defense was not great. So I think we learned from those losses. Mm-hmm. So we got off to this great start. Now, to keep this going with 10 games left here in our season, six of them on the road, four at home, I don't know what to expect. You know what I'm going to do, John, is just worry about today. Win today's practice. That's what we're trying to do, and then we'll see what happens down the road.
How do you focus just on today? Because with a 32-game schedule, and you mentioned already in football, you know, we've got 7 days to get ready for one, where you've got one or two, and then you play, and then you got one or two, and you play again.
Yeah, the rhythm for basketball, and actually when we play, if we've played every week once, we've been very bad at it. We're used to a rhythm. But I could imagine football coaches saying, all right, we play Saturday, now we play Tuesday, we play Friday, and then we're going to play Monday.
Oh, yeah.
And that would drive them crazy. Coach Harbaugh's head would explode. And Don Brown, all those guys with all this stuff we have to do. But we're playing games that end in central time at 11 o'clock, and we're getting home at 3 in the morning, and we got a game in 48 hours. So there's this quick turnarounds, and that's why you can't look too far ahead. You can't look at the schedule. You just got to focus on the day. Make sure you guys get rest. Like today after the Ohio State game, we'll have a great period where our starters will watch a lot of the action. They won't get off their feet that much. They won't get on their feet that much because today has to be a recovery day. That way we can have a full hard practice tomorrow and be ready for Iowa with a day off on Saturday.
We've got Coach John Beilein joining us on In the Trenches. Coach, before I let you go, I think everybody wants to know how you feeling.
Yeah, John, I feel great. It's a great question because and I urge everybody to stay up with their regular checkups. But it threw me for a loop when all of a sudden the doctors are saying, you got some blocked arteries and you need open-heart surgery, even though I had no symptoms. Mm-hmm. So what it taught me a lot is the dudes that did open heart surgery about 20 years ago, before all this technology, my dad had one 30 years ago, 40 years ago. He's one tough man because it was definitely the hardest thing I ever had to do, is recover after you get hit by a train.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when they open your chest up. So now I just feel great. I don't see any, I don't have any effects at all. In fact, I'm probably better. Now that I think back of it, any type of dizziness or anything I used to have occasionally, very occasionally, right? Probably I haven't had any of it at all. So circulation is great. I feel great. Love the team. Go Blue.
February's American Heart Month. You guys have anything you guys are going to do?
I did a PSA for it, and I probably should do more. I know it's going to become a charity for Kathleen and I this coming year. So we're incredible here. What the Frankl Center does at the University of Michigan for heart disease and heart repair and things. I love the doctors here are incredible.
Well, Coach, I sure appreciate you joining us, and best of luck on Friday night.
Thanks, John.
Thanks to Coach Beilein for taken a minute out of his busy schedule, as he talked about. He's got a game and then a couple days of practice and game. They're in a rhythm, so I really appreciate him taking a couple of minutes to talk to me and coming on In the Trenches. And, you know, this has been a year for records. And we talked about Michigan setting the record of 17 straight wins to start the season. But, Brian, Coach Beilein set another record, didn't he?
He did. He tied Johnny Orr for the most wins in Big Ten play at the University of Michigan. He didn't want to talk about that on Tuesday after the game. He didn't want to talk about that with you. But there has been a lot of basketball played at this university. And John Beilein, at the end of the day, he's going to go down, I think, as the greatest coach in the history of men's basketball at the University of Michigan. And he just wants to deflect that. He always says, we'll talk about it. We'll reflect upon it in retirement. I'll tell you this, John. He's going to be quite busy in his retirement because there's going to be a lot for him to think about, remember, and reflect on. A ton of really positive, thrilling accomplishments, and the best ones have come in Ann Arbor.
The best ones have come in Ann Arbor, and I guarantee you there's more to come. And talking about the great tradition that is Michigan, there is also a gentleman who turned 94 on January 30, which was Wednesday of this week, and that's Bump Elliott. Longtime great Michigan man, started his career at Purdue, went off to serve our country in World War II, came back to play football at Michigan, coached here, and then for a long time was the athletic director at Iowa. So here at Michigan and definitely on In the Trenches, we want to wish Bump Elliott a very happy 94th birthday, and we wish Coach Beilein great success the rest of this season and the rest of his career here. And we're looking forward to seeing what the Wolverines do on Friday night against the Hawkeyes. We'll have more to come in the near future about Michigan basketball, give you an update on Michigan football and all things Michigan athletics. This has been In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen. In the Trenches with John Jansen is an exclusive presentation of IMG, America's home for college sports.